John goes up into heaven and he sees this heavenly vision of God carrying out his judgment. Well, now as we get into chapter 12, the perspective changes, and instead of looking at a heavenly perspective of the wrath of God and what happens with the saints and what is God carrying out here, we see the perspective change to an earthly perspective. And so...
All right, we got a mic on now, so I don't even notice. So, so we change to a earthly perspective, and what we're going to see is we're going to see, well, how is the devil involved? What does the devil use, and what is he doing? And really, that's where Revelation chapters 12 pick up. Is you get a sense of how does the devil come into this picture of judgment? What's his role and what is he accomplishing? And that's what we talked about last week largely, is in chapter 12 you get these two pictures, if you will, these two visions, or really it's a picture, if you will, because it talks about a big thing in a short amount of time. You have a picture of a woman with a crown of 12 stars who is standing on the moon and clothed in the sun, and she's about to give birth. And then this hideous dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns, diadems, are on his head, and he is just waiting for this woman to give birth so he can devour the child and the woman and destroy what she's trying to accomplish. And when that child is born, it is swept up to heaven, and the woman is protected, and the dragon completely fails in his mission. So as we're thinking about, well, how does the devil play into this judgment that we're talking about? The first picture that the Revelation gives us is a picture of Satan's failure. Now, this is sort of a quick glimpse, if you will. You just see the whole story of Jesus and the judgment playing out very quickly, right? The woman is the righteous remnant. The child is Jesus. You see this remnant being saved, and for 1260 days, that's the amount of time that it's allotted for this judgment to take place. And the woman is protected. The woman is saved in the wilderness, and the child is up in heaven, and Satan... you'd think a powerful beast that can sweep away a third of the stars with its tail could accomplish the little job of killing a mother in childbirth and an infant. If you want to say, what more vulnerable position can anybody be in than giving childbirth with a predator waiting to devour that child? I don't think you could be more vulnerable. But it really shows the contrast. Even though Satan has power, his power cannot measure to the power of God. And God protected that woman, and God protected his child, just like he said he would. So now we get that picture, and the next picture is very similar. 7 through 17, you get a lot more detail going through the chapter, but essentially the same thing. It starts out with a war in heaven, and Michael and his angels are fighting against Satan, and Satan wasn't strong enough, and they overcome him. They defeat him in heaven, and there's no longer any place for him there, and so he's cast down. Well, how's he cast down? How's this work out? Well, it says right there in the text that they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, and you see that this Satan lost his access to heaven, or whatever power came along with that position. He lost it when Jesus purchased for himself his church with his blood. That blood diminished Satan's power greatly. Now, just because Satan lost that war does not mean that he gave up on what he's trying to accomplish. So he's cast down to earth, and he decides, I'm going to destroy this remnant, this woman. I'm going to wage war against the saints. And so he goes ahead and tries to do that. And this is the image here I'm showing on the screen. it's not real clear, but you see the dragon over here with seven heads spewing out water, and the water is flooding across the desert trying to sweep away the woman. But the earth opens its mouth and absorbs the water, and the Lord gives the woman wings of an eagle so she can escape and have shelter in the wilderness for, I believe it says, times and half a time. Let's see if I can... in verse 14, it says, times and half a times, 3.5 years, 42 months, 1,260 days. So this 1,260 days, 42 months lets us know we're talking about the same time period. We're talking about the same thing. So Satan waiting for that woman to give birth and devour her, that's a failure. That's a snapshot. Now here's more detail. He was in heaven. He was making claim against our souls. And he lost that claim when the blood of Jesus Christ purchased us. He no longer could make that claim. He no longer could wage that war. And he was stopped from making that claim. He comes to the earth. He decides, I'm going to destroy the righteous remnant. I'm going to persecute the woman and the child. Well, the Lord spares that woman and protects her. He spews out this river, and it ends up falling on something other than what he expected it to. See, he's going to destroy God's people and with it the remnant, but God protects the remnant. And we see that when Jesus gives his warnings. When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, flee to the hills. That's your sign. Just as sure as you see, you know the fig leaf is about to sprout and the spring is coming, that's how sure this sign is. So when you see this sign, Jerusalem surrounded by armies, Christians flee. When they saw the sign, the Christians fled. There were no Christians in the city of Jerusalem when Rome conquered it. And because of that, they were spared. And the dragon failed in his mission on that point. But look in verse 16 and 17. But the earth helped the woman out, and the earth opened its mouth, drank up the river which the dragon poured out of his mouth. So the dragon was enraged with the woman, and went off to make war with the rest of her children who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. So we see him failing in that initial attempt, but he still has power to wage war on the earth. And so he goes off to persecute the Christians. And what we know about history of Rome is, yeah, there was great persecution in that time period. A lot of harm coming to the Christians. The Christians that this book is written to are suffering. You read in the first chapters 2 and 3 of Revelation, it talks about, I know you're in the, you have the synagogue of Satan there. I know you have these hard times. It's going to be 10 days where you're going to suffer. There's all these indications that these Christians are suffering. And from an earthly perspective, it can be really easy to think Satan's winning. He's getting his way. And that's really this next, we're going to go through the same story again starting in 13, and there's going to be a lot more detail. How did Satan carry this work out? But the thing we need to keep in mind is John starts out showing us your Christians are going to win, Christ is going to conquer, Satan's going to fail. That's a very important part of this message. So we see it in a small scope, we see it in a larger scope. Now we're going to expand that scope again here in chapter 13. And we're going to look at the particulars of what was Satan doing when he was spewing this water out of his mouth, if you will. And that's what we're going to be looking at here in chapter 13. Before we get into 13, though, I want to start in Daniel chapter 7. This will help us to understand some of the symbols we're going to read tonight. So let's turn to Daniel chapter 7. And I just made note of a few of these, just on the slides up there, you'll just see a few points that we will recognize as we read through this. Starting in verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions in his mind as he lay on his bed. And he wrote the dream down and related the following summary of it. Daniel said, I was looking in my vision by night, And behold, the winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts were coming up out of the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had wings of an eagle. I kept looking until its wings were plucked, and it lifted up from the ground and was made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind was also given to it. A second beast, resembling a bear. And it was raised up on one side, and three ribs were in its mouth between its teeth. And thus they said to it, "Arise, devour much meat." After this I kept looking, and behold another one, like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird, and the beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I kept looking in the night vision, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying and extremely strong. It had large iron teeth. It devoured and it crushed and trampled down the remainder of its feet, and it was different from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. While I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up from them, and three of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it. And behold, this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth uttering great boast. I kept looking until thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. By his vesture was like white snow, hair of his head pure wool. His throne was ablaze in flames, its wheels were a burning fire. A river of fire was flowing and coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands were attending him, and myriads upon myriads were standing before him. The court sat, and the books were opened. Then I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain, and its body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but an extension of life was granted to them for an appointed period of time. I kept looking in the night vision, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like the Son of Man coming. And he came up to the Ancient of Days, and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. As for me, Daniel, my spirit was distressed within me, and the visions in my mind kept alarming me. I approached one of those who were standing by and began asking him the exact meaning of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. These great beasts, which are four in number, are four kings who will arise from the earth. But the saints of the highest one will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever for all ages to come. Then I desired to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the other ones, exceedingly dreadful, and with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder with its feet. And the meaning of the 10 horns which were on its head, and the other horn which came up, and which the three of them fell, namely the horn which had eyes and mouth uttering great boasts, and which was larger in appearance than its associates. I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the highest one, and the time arrived for the saints, when the saints took possession of the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms, and will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. As for the 10 horns, out of the kingdoms 10 kings will arise, and another will arise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones, and will subdue 3 kings. He will speak out against the Most High, and wear down the saints of the highest one, and he will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. But the court will sit for judgment, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, the dominion, and the greatness of all the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the highest one. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions will serve and obey him. At this point, the revelation ended. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts were greatly alarming me, and my face grew pale, but I kept the matter to myself. So here you have, it's a lot to take in and an interesting read. I would recommend reading it over a few times just to think through all a lot of what we're talking about in Revelation. We at least see alluded to here and reflected here to one extent or another. But we see some details that we'll draw out is there was four beasts, a lion, a bear, a leopard, and then a great beast that had some unique characteristics about it. The ten horns of the great beast are ten kings. The beast is uttering great boasts. He makes war with the saints. Things are given into him for times and half a time. So he has a limited amount of scope to act. But ultimately, the saints are victorious. So you see Daniel looking ahead into the future, and there's some details here, but as we look in the book of Revelation, we're going to recognize a few of these traits of the beast, and probably more than I have marked here, but we have to limit ourselves somewhere. So we're just going with these few because these are the most obvious ones. So let's look in Revelation chapter 13, starting in verse 1. And the dragon stood on the sand of the seashore. Then I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on its horns were 10 diadems, and on its heads were blasphemous names. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. I saw one of the heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. They worshipped the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast, and who is able to wage war with him?" There was given to him a mouth to speak arrogant words and blasphemies, and authority to act for 42 months was given to him. And he opened his mouth in blasphemies against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, that is, those who dwell in heaven. It was also given to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority over every tribe and people and tongue and nation was given to him. And all who dwell on the earth will worship him, everyone whose name has not been written from the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who had been slain. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is destined for captivity, to captivity he goes. If anyone kills with a sword, he must be killed. Here is the perseverance and faith of the saints. So here we have this picture of the dragon on the seashore. And as he stands on the shore, a beast is coming up out of the water. And if you look at the beast and you look at the dragon, they're almost identical, except for the beast coming out of the water has 10 diadems, and the dragon only had 7 diadems. So I think those are symbolic things that I'm not going to talk about, but those are symbolic things. But as we look at this beast, as he's being presented, you notice that he has qualities of these four beasts that Daniel saw. He has lion qualities, feet of the bear, leopard qualities, and he's a beast coming up out of the ocean. What we see is Daniel's vision, whatever's coming up out of the ocean, has some of the qualities of these other kingdoms, but it really reflects that fourth kingdom in Daniel. And the fourth kingdom, it had one of its notable qualities was it had 10 horns, and it says it's 10 kings. If you look in Revelation chapter 17, and verse 12, we have our interpretation of what are the 10 horns on the beast. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have not received a kingdom, but they receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour. So here as we look at this beast coming out of the ocean, he has 10 horns, and his 10 horns are 10 kings, very similar to what we see in Daniel. We see him uttering great boasts. On the head of the beast coming out of the sea, there's 7 heads, and they have blasphemies written on all of them. We see him uttering boasts against God, and that's the same as the beast in Daniel. The beast in Daniel is given authority for times and half a time. We look at the beast coming out of the ocean, and he's given authority for 42 months. So here again, we see the similarity between this beast and that beast. Both beasts make war with the saints. So they have a time to make war with the saints. And one of the things it says in Daniel is it appeared as if he was going to overpower the saints, but then the Lord took control. But there's this element of, are we going to succeed? Did we choose the right side? How's this going to work out? So it looks like the beast is going to succeed, but in the end, we see the victory of the saints. If you turn back again to Revelation chapter 17, we see this as well. In verse 14, it says, "These, being the sea beast, will wage war against the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, because he is Lord of lords, King of kings, and those who are with him are called the chosen faithful." In Daniel, what you see is, it looks like that beast, that fourth beast, is going to overcome, but then the saints overcome with the help of God, and they begin to rule. Authority is given to that Son of Man coming up on the cloud. He's given an everlasting kingdom, and all the kingdoms of the earth are turned over to be ruled by the saints. And that's really the picture you have here as well. One other thing I would note in Revelation 17:15, it talks about, "And he said to me, 'The waters which you saw were where the harlot sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues.'" So this beast is coming up out of the water, which is peoples and nations and multitudes and tongues. And in Daniel, what was given to the beast to rule? Peoples and nations and multitudes. And really, what we can say very clearly, if you understand Daniel, that fourth beast is the Roman Empire. In Revelation, the same thing. That fourth beast, that sea beast coming up out, is the Roman Empire. Here's another interesting element to it. It says it had a head that looked like it was slain, and it came back to life. So seven heads, but one of them was slain, and it came back to life. The history of the Roman emperors, Julius Caesar was the first, and he took control of the empire, and he was murdered on the Senate floor, stabbed by all the senators, I believe, and they killed him. And so Rome thought, the senators thought, we returned Rome to being a republic. And it looked like the empire had failed, and it was back to being a republic. But 13 years later, Octavius, who's also known as Caesar Augustus, he seized power again and began to reign in Rome. So the beast that was and was not and then came back, or looked like he was dead and then came back to life, that is also an indication, an understanding of the history of the Roman Empire. So it's very clear the sea beast coming up out of the sea is the Roman Empire. So as we talk about Satan taking control, spewing water, trying to wipe out the chosen remnant, how is he doing that? What tool is he using to wage that war? The Roman Empire. So that's what we're looking at. And in verse 9 and 10, then, if anyone... Yes, it says, "All who dwell on the earth will worship him, even those who have not been, everyone whose name has not been written from the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who has been slain. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is destined to captivity, to captivity he goes. If anyone kills with the sword he must be killed. Here is the perseverance and faith of the saints." This is giving a message to the saints as they see these things take place and live in this time. He's saying, don't fight. You can find a very similar passage in Jeremiah, says this very same thing, and it's the same message. Don't fight it. If you're going to be if you're getting captured, then go to captivity. If you pick up the sword to fight against this beast, by the sword you will be killed. So he who has an ear, let him hear. Christians, just go along with what's happening. This is by under God's control. And it says, here is the endurance and the faith of the saints. How hard would it be to let yourself be captured? Doing it out of faithfulness to God. I'm going to let myself be captured and put into slavery because this army's marching through instead of fighting against them. It would be a very hard thing to do. But that's the idea here. Here's the endurance of the saints. Here's the command of the Lord. You don't fight them. You go along with it because the Lord is doing something greater. And I think in our time, we don't face the same troubles, but a lot of times we want to fight. We want to stand up for ourselves or whatever it is. And maybe the right thing to do is not to fight against those things we don't have control over, but to trust in the Lord in that. So let's look in verse 11. Then I saw another beast here. Actually, hang on a moment. Yeah, we're land beasts. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose fatal wound was healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which it was given to him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who has the wound of the sword and has come to life. And it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast would even speak and cause as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And he caused all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the free men and the slaves, to be given the mark on their right hand and on their forehead. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. So we see first Satan giving his power to the Roman Empire. And so as you remember when Jesus was being tempted, and he showed Jesus all the kingdoms of earth in a moment and says, all of these I give to you. And he also says, because I have authority to give these to you, all of these I will give to you if you bow down and worship me. And Jesus says, you're to worship God alone. So he doesn't take it. Well, what's happening here? Satan delegated that power to someone else. And it's a beast that follows very closely after him. Has a lot of his traits. And that beast not only has the power and rule that Satan has been given, but he also has an influence of worship. That's what Satan, if you worship me, I'll give these things to you. Apparently he gave it to someone who's going to fall down and worship him. So we see this another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. Now, this is the only time in the book of Revelation where lamb is used and it's not Jesus. Everywhere else in the book, the lamb is Christ. Here, there's a lamb, but he has the voice of a dragon. What are we talking about here? In Matthew chapter 24, Jesus warns, I think, about this very thing. Matthew 24, starting in verse 23. Then if anyone says to you, behold, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe him. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and will show great signs and wonders, so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect. Behold, I have told you in advance. So if they say to you, behold, he is in the wilderness, do not go out. Or, behold, he is in the inner rooms, do not believe them. For just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so the coming of the Son of Man will be. Wherever the corpse is, there the vulture gathers. So you see this thing that Jesus warned them about. What did he say? There's going to be false Christs. There's going to be false prophets. And they're going to work powerful acts. Now, what is this land beast doing as it comes up out of the land? It is in the form of a lamb, but it speaks with the voice of the dragon. It's a liar. In fact, if you go back to the Roman Empire, one of the things said about it, who can wage war against the beast? Well, it has Satan's power. Do we already know that Satan had lost? In chapter 12, Satan lost the war and was cast out of heaven. So now he's waging a new war, and the lie he's saying is, I can't be defeated. So you just see Satan's work in this is that he's lying. And so this lamb, well, I'm the lamb, but I speak with the voice of a dragon. He's a false Christ. Don't listen to him. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence. And he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose fatal wound was healed. And so you see this false prophet causing people to worship the beast. I believe that worship would be in the form of emperor worship. You remember when Jesus was being crucified? And I don't think that this is a false prophecy, but I just think it's an example. We have a few examples in the New Testament of this. But when Jesus was being crucified, Pilate says, should I crucify your king? And they say, we have no king but Caesar. So there you start seeing that influence of who are we putting our allegiance to? If you remember Acts chapter 8, Simon the sorcerer, what was he called? The mighty power of God. Acts chapter 13, Bar-Jesus, Eliamus, I think was his other name. He was a Jewish false prophet who was convincing a Roman proconsul to turn against the faith. So leading up to, I mean, there's a few examples of it. There was a demon-possessed woman, and she could foretell the future, and she was following Paul around saying, this is a servant of the Most High God, and he cast out the demon, and they were upset because they ruined his prophet. So what we're seeing is those things were taking place in that time period. And the warning is, don't listen to it. Don't go along with it. One of the things that the Roman Empire would do is they would want you to just offer a pinch of salt as a tribute to Caesar to acknowledge his deity. I don't know. I know that was taking place in this time period, and maybe this is one of the things that might be considered the mark of the beast, right? Turning away from God in order to offer that worship. So anyway, there are things going on that might do this, and really you couldn't buy or sell unless you were willing to offer that salt. And maybe someone might say, it's just do it. You're just throwing a pinch of salt on a little statue. Who cares? Just overlook it. But the Christians wouldn't do it. They would not offer that to Jesus. And so you see this land beast, he is deceiving. And really when you see the voice of the dragon, that's a liar's voice. He's a deceiver. And he's causing people, and as Jesus said, even some of the elect, to go after and worship this beast. In verse 16 he says, he causes all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the free men and the slaves, to be given the mark on their right hand and on their forehead. There's a lot, big deal, a lot of speculation made about the mark of the beast. There's two things I think that it could be. The first one, it's called gematria. In their time, there was a way of adding up numbers and creating numbers out of their name. So, just as an example, in the time of Nero, there was a poem going around that if you add the number of Nero's name, it also equals he murders his mother. So if you put the numbers of those two statements together, they're the same. So it was just a thing that they did. Some people will say 666 if you turn it to Hebrew. So this is one of those things where we're just guessing because Irenaeus, he was a avid writer in the year probably 180. He comments, we've lost the meaning of this already. We don't know who the guy is. We can't figure it out. That was 180 years after you know, basically 80 years after the book was written, and they lost it then. So for me to, but you can guess at what it could be. Some people would say it's Caesar, Nero, or, you know, that sort of a thing. But Homer Haley was commenting on this, and he said the Jews were superstitious about the number 6 because it just falls short of perfection. And so it's the number of man. And so you think about that, it's falling short. It's about, it's a failure. It's really what, 6 is a failure, right? And 666, you triple down on a failure, and that's a failure every time, right? And that's really the, I think that's really the idea here. You get the mark of the beast, and what does that mean? You're going to fail. Now, I don't know if that's the right interpretation, but I think it really catches the idea that goes along with this mark of the beast, is if you throw your allegiance in with Satan, you are going to fail. That is not going to work out for you. It's going to fall short. It's going to fall apart. And there's nothing that can be done about that. Satan is doomed for failure. In Genesis 3:15, or 3:15, I believe, it says that you're going to fail. He's going to crush your head, and you're just going to bruise his heel. Satan was doomed for failure from the very beginning, and I think that's what this mark is. It's really an allegiance to Satan, and so you're throwing your lot with Satan, then you're doomed for failure. I want to look back now, because the chapter 14 is a parallel to chapter 7. If you recall chapter 7, there is 144,000, and then myriads upon myriads of other saved people in there. And it really answers the question at the end of chapter 6, who can stand in that day? Who can stand in the day of the Lord? Well, I want to turn back there to chapter 6 and verse 15. So here's the 6 seals broken, and the sky is split apart like a scroll, and it's rolled up, and every mountain and island are moved out of their places. Verse 15, the kings of the earth and the great men and the commanders and the rich and the strong and every slave and free man hid themselves in the caves among the rocks and mountains. And they said to the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the presence of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand? So here we are in heaven, and we're looking down, and the men on the earth, and there's specific men, it says, the great men and the commanders and the rich and the strong and every slave and free man. Now let's go to chapter 13, verse 16. And he causes all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the free men and the slaves, to be given the mark on the right hand of their forehead. So from heaven's perspective, the sky is open, they see the throne room, the Lamb standing there in judgment, and they're going to the mountain saying, fall on us, hide us, who can stand in the presence of the Lord? And then in the beginning of chapter 7, the winds are stopped, this movement of judgment is stopped, and they go out to mark the righteous. And we're not moving forward until all the righteous are marked and preserved. Well, if you're in heaven, that's what you're looking at, right? You're looking at what's going to happen in heaven. We're going to save the righteous. There was 144,000 of them. Beyond that, there was myriads and myriads of every nation, tribe, tongue. This is in verse 9. And after these things, I saw, and behold, a great multitude, which no one could count, for every nation and all tribes and peoples and tongues standing before the throne and before the Lamb were clothed in white clothes with palm branches in their hands, and they cry out. Verse 14, I said to him, my Lord, or they say, who are these? And I said to him, my Lord, you know. And he said to me, these are the ones who come out of the great tribulation, and they have washed their robes and made themselves white in the blood of the Lamb. So, in heaven, you see the 144,000 marked, and beyond that, all these people who are saved from the wrath of the Lamb because they washed their robes in the blood. Now, let's go to earth. Let's look at this same moment from the earthly perspective. What's going on the earth? as these people are being marked in heaven, right? The angels come down to mark the righteous. What's happening on the earth? Verse 16. And he causes all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the free men and the slaves, all the people who said, who can stand on this day and mountains fall on us? All those people, they're being given a mark on their right hand and on their forehead. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or sell except the one who has this mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. So God's marking out the righteous. The beast is marking out the unrighteous. Everyone who's not in the book of the Lamb. Everyone who has that, who has paid tribute to that beast and worshipped him and defiled themselves in whatever way that is, they're being marked. So chapter 7, we see it from a heavenly perspective, and we see the righteous. The end of chapter 13, the beginning of chapter 14, we're seeing a slightly different perspective, but the same scene is playing out before our eyes. Verse 1. Actually, you know what? I'm out of time, and I wanted to get through 14, but I'm just not going to get through 14. So I think I'll just pause right here. One thing I'll do, though. What we're really seeing here is a separating. You're seeing the righteous being identified and the unrighteous being identified. You're seeing those who ally themselves with the Lamb being identified and those who ally themselves with Satan being identified out. We know who they are. It's going to be very clear. As we go through 14, 14 is all about separating and defining who's under judgment and who's going to be victorious. Something we read this morning in John chapter 3. It's the very last verse of the chapter. Verse 36. The one who believes in the Son has eternal life, but he who does not obey the Son will not see life, but the wrath of God abides on him. John the Baptist is making a statement about who we need to believe in and follow. And it says, the one who believes in the Son has eternal life, and the one who doesn't believe in the Son, the wrath of God abides on him. That's what we're seeing in Revelation chapter 14. You see Satan mustering his forces, and now you see the righteous and the wicked being separated. Anyone who doesn't believe and obey the Son of Man, is going to fall under judgment. We might be talking in Revelation about a specific moment in history where this is happening, but this is going to be true throughout the ages. If we don't ally ourselves with Jesus Christ, if we don't take that very seriously, if we don't let His words and His way change our lives and define how we move forward in our life, then we're going to find ourselves under judgment. It's a very important thing. But on the other hand, if we do believe in the Son and we do follow Him, we will be saved. You cannot lose. You cannot fall as long as you're faithful in Jesus Christ. Satan will lose and Christ will win. Well, what about when if I'm being captured? That's one of the things he says. Here's the wisdom, perseverance of the saints. Just let yourself go. You don't have to fight anymore. You don't have to worry because Christ will make you victorious. As we look at this, that's really the comfort that the saints who read it in their day got out of this. We're on the Lord's side. We're going to see victory. But all of us who serve the Lord, we're going to see victory. Let's not let that be taken from us because we're unwilling to make the changes we need to make. If you're here tonight and there are some changes you need to make, or if you need help in your walk with God, please come forward now and ask for that help you need as we stand and sing the song of invitation.